Welcome to All Learning Reimagined, the podcast that defines convention and redefines the purpose and practice of education. Here we venture beyond institutional boundaries. Whether you're a parent, educator, or curious mind devoted to lifelong growth, this is your space to challenge assumptions and co-create a more humane and intuitive approach to education. Let's reimagine what education can be.
G'day, and welcome to All Learning Reimagined. So I'm Teresa, your host, bringing you a little ray of sunshine, as together we're reimagining the future of education, one inspired story at a time. And today I have a special guest, and we're going to do something a little bit different. You'll work that out as we go. So we have Neville with us today, and he has spent 45 years as a freelance structural mechanical draftsman, and eventually having a son at 52 years age in 2012, and became aware of his obligation to eat well and understand what is nutritional for the body. My gosh, I think I need a little bit of that. And in the same year, he was having a mortgage fight with Westpac Bank, and he decided he needed to learn a little bit more about what is the difference between legal and lawful, and what the courts were, and how to respond, and how to be a good example for his son, which is very admirable. So if we fast forward that to 13 years, he's now doing workshops for people to let them know about the entire legal construct and the fact that it's a trick. And there's a path to live in the private, and not only lawfully, but legally as well. So welcome, Neville.
Thank you so much, Teresa. And don't we know so many Teresas, Leah?
We do.
You seem to be a very special one, I must say.
Oh, I do like a chat. You'll probably find out. So I really love this topic because it's a very different, and yet it's really important that it gets aired, particularly in education, because nobody seems to know about it in general, in my world, around people that I have as well. So, Neville, what sparked your interest in exploring the difference between legal and lawful?
Well, that's a great question, and I have to answer it very honestly, keeping in mind that everybody on this planet, all men and women, we're all of the same family, and we all believe different things, but fundamentally, I think every man and woman is good, and sadly, we've just been rearranged on the Monopoly board, and it's a bit of chaos at the moment, but my mother was a real political juggernaut. My sister became a lawyer. My identical twin brother was 2 times Australian light middleweight champion. I had a great relationship with my uncle, Ted Hazlett, who was a barrister and owned a little law firm in Warrigal called Great Friend and Long. We had a wonderful relationship. And one day while I was working on my convertible E-Type Jag, and Ted and I were in his property in Druin. we were adjusting the torsion bars to lift the front up, and had the engine out. And I remember it was 1979, and we were singing along to Racy, Some Girls Will. And here's this big man, a barrister, and with his with me, my auntie was married to Ted, and here we are working on, we had a great love of cars. He had Daytona Ferraris and XK120s and a fleet of cars. And I think something happened in our conversation between our singing, and I bragged about the only book that I had ever read was The Old Man and the Sea. And it was the first time that I'd seen Ted almost go white, and he became all stoic and walked up to me and said, "Neville, if you do not read, you're going to be in big trouble. You must read." And we just kept singing and working on the car. A few years later, my mother was always interested in politics, and she was an avid reader. She would read Tolstoy, Anna Karenina, 200 Years. And one day back in 2012, after the 2007 downturn in Queensland, I'm a structural mechanical freelance draftsman, a contractor for 45 years, and all of a sudden we had all lost our work because the big mining boom in Queensland had collapsed, and I was driving back from Cannonvale, doing a tiling job, and I was listening to the ABC interview Philip Adams. Philip Adams was interviewing a Zionist Jew from New York, and they were talking about the fact that the Zionist Jews were going to make Western Australia Israel. The minute I got home, I called Mum in Croatia and I apologised to her because she told that to me in 1986. So you can imagine what a great impact Mum had on me. Then by 2014, I walked into the land titles office at Beenleigh and I filled out the mortgage release documents on my own with a bit of help from some old Aussie Anzacs. And before you know it, the $400,000 mortgage that I had on my little beach house at Hope Island at 13 Crescent Avenue, well, it was actually 13 Nelson Avenue, Hope Island at the time. 2 weeks later, by registered post, the land titles office had sent me a certificate of title with an unencumbered mortgage for that property.
Mm. Wow.
But of course, the legal wheels kept turning and that was all turned around. But it made me realise that, gee whiz, I was discovering that you could do these things. There was nothing you couldn't do. In 2004, I published a book on the legal construction of a patent request, and I sold that around the world for $149. I wasn't the technical author. My sister, being a lawyer, her partner at the time was a lawyer, and her partner was the technical author, and that was a lovely obstacle that I had gotten out of my way and thought to myself, wow, I've just published a book. People are buying it for $149 and it's helping them write a patent. How incredible was that? And here I am just a freelance draftsman, but with a great interest in writing and words, and because I've always been in the company of people who were, you know, semi-literate. You have to, if you're going to follow the law, you really have to try to have someone that you can work with and grow with and learn the law. It's almost impossible to do it on your own.
Mm. Oh my gosh, this is really interesting, and it's something that I don't know very much about. So I'm leaning into your expertise here. Can you actually give me an example of something that's legal but not lawful, or vice versa? Like, what's the difference between legal and lawful?
Well, that's really easy. In 1933, the world went into bankruptcy, but it was a slow process. But cut a long story short, we went from buying a home in Australia with gold and silver coins. Now, the Bills of Exchange Act 1909 makes it very clear that money is only gold and silver coins. Mm-hmm. It isn't what you have in your pocket. What you have in your pocket is an example of something called equivocation and dialectics. That means that you believe that you have money in your pocket, but in fact, you actually don't. That's equivocation. If we don't understand how words work and how dangerous words are and how words have controlled us and got us into so much trouble, we're really going to be in more trouble. The advent of the internet is something that made everybody realize what the hell was going on, because it was the first time people, men around the world, men and women, were able to read books on jurisprudence, the law, and that is probably the reason why the global one world order are trying to kill everybody, because they don't have much time. Everybody knows what they're doing. So when you bought a home in 1933, I would give Teresa gold and silver coins, and the conveyances, the legal conveyances, they would provide a deed of title. Mm-hmm. Today, because you and I, if you and I purchase a home, we buy it with fiat dollars, so there is no substance. So we've substituted substance for benefits, and so now when someone buys a home, they buy it with no money, therefore they only get a certificate of title, not a deed. And that means you don't own the home, but you don't know that. And it's astonishing that the entire world, or the Western world at least, if they don't pay their rates, in 3 years' time, they'll be booted out of their home, and they can't work out that they don't own their home. It's quite incredible that schools have been able to damage the men and women of the West so severely that they don't even know that when they buy a home, they don't own it, or a car. I mean, I'm a first-hand witness to being pulled over by the police with no license, no registration. They took the car, put it on a flat top, and they crushed it. That's because I never own the car. So There's the difference between what is legal and what is lawful. What is legal is the definition of what is legal is the undoing of God's law. That comes out of the Britannica. So there is a definition of what is legal. It means it's the undoing of God's law, and it is certainly not lawful, because now you can see if you lawfully buy a home, you would be buying gold and silver, and you would be getting a deed for that property, and you would own it outright. Some people call that a fee simple, but we don't want fee simple, because that's part of the English East India Company monarchical system. We just want to own property. And right now, nobody owns a home, nobody owns a car.
Wow. Well, you know what? Like, this has only come into my sphere of knowledge recently, and it's made me actually stop and think, why aren't we being taught this? Like, why do we not know about this? Do you have an opinion on that? Like, do you believe schools are avoiding to teach this for a reason?
Oh no, absolutely. Well, look, on my website, treasontoday.com, I try very hard to, I built that website because while I was learning about the law, instead of racing home after work and being inspired by poetry, and then doing a collage for that poetry, I dumped the poetry and started to make a website and download videos that about COVID, about you know, the about money, about the how this world is just in rack and ruin. And my website was a library for me. Now on that website, there's a woman, an American woman. Her name is. Isabel. What's her first name? And she is groundbreaking in explaining the sister, the Rockefellers and the Carnegie organization, Charlotte Isabel. These are the people who brought into the schools in the West a Prussian system of schooling. So very similar to Codex Alimentarius with Abraham Flexner in 1905, traveling around America for 15 years and then handing the Rockefellers and the Carnegies a report to dismantle the homeopaths and bring in the medical pharmaceutical industry. Their same plan was with the education system. I can tell you what happened to me in 1970. I was at Q State in 1970 here in Melbourne, in Victoria, Australia. Mm-hmm. And Miss D. Batista was my English teacher. Do you know what she did to our class? We walked into the class and everybody had a sheet of paper on our table. And she immediately got the attention of the class, and this is back in 1970, and she said, okay, I want everybody in this class to read this the whole front paper. When you have finished reading word for word the front page of the document in front of you, I then only then want you to turn it around and do the test. Now, of course, one of my credentials is that I went to 9 schools and got expelled twice. And what I'm trying to say was I was not a very good student, and I, you know, was not, I did not gravitate to doing tests. So I thought to myself, you know what, why don't I do the test first, because we've only got 15 minutes, and then after I finish the test, then I can read the silly front page. Now, when the time was up, Miss D. Batista, then before the 15 minutes ended, she told everybody to stop, and everybody who had read the front page, they did not turn it over, because at the very last sentence it said, if you have read this whole page, you no longer need to do the test. So everybody that turned their page over, Steve Batista could see all the kids turning pages over, probably not many of them. I was one of them. I wasn't a very obedient student, and I thought for myself, and I thought, you know, this is ridiculous. I'm going to take advantage of what's in front of me. I don't need to listen to what the teacher said. I'll just listen to what makes sense to me. And no one has ever told me this, but I assure you that I believe that was a test that came straight from the Rockefeller Carnegie Corporation from America. That was really the bedrock of the school curriculum system in Australia.
Wow. Well, I mean, if what would you do if you're designing a course for children? What sorts of topics and things would you do in schools, you know, to build real world understanding of law and responsibility?
You know, I wouldn't be gentle. I was just watching a movie last night. It was very gripping, fairly hectic. It's called America Primeval. And in the movie, there was a young boy. He was about 10 years old. He broke a leg and, you know, it was Indians and cowboys and Mormons and killing and killing. But in the end, essentially in this movie, it was very clear that the good guy, the good cowboy in the movie said to the young boy, he said, you're a man now. You've got to look after your mum. You've only got one path and you're the boss. I think there's no need for kid gloves. I think all the kids need to be very aware that the legal system is a lie. The communist United Nations is also entrapment. They're not human. They need to be told exactly what is going on. And this is very difficult because the parents, the mums and dads, if they don't know what's going on, it's going to be very hard to teach the kids what's going on. But fundamentally, you can give the kids the correct information. Who is going to be able to do that? I don't know. What mums and dads are going to all be in agreement with the fact that the United Nations is a communist outfit, and it's hoping that you don't know that you're putting your hand up to be a Homo sapien. And if you're a Homo sapien, then you're part of the chimpanzee family. And if you're part of the chimpanzee family, well, then we can allegedly presume that you have abandoned your father's estate, equitable estate in land, and that you're happy to be a chimp, and we'll give you government benefits instead. And the New South Wales trustee and guardian, they can administrate your trust while you're happy running around calling yourself human. This is not complex, what's happened. What is sadly complex is that too many people don't understand the intrinsic facts about the United Nations, the government, United States Securities and Exchange Commission in the District of Columbia, and the Freemason Crown Temple, or if you like, the BAR, the British Accreditation Registry. It's not a lot to learn, but it's for many, it's too much to absorb. You know, what is a magistrate's court? What's a county court? What's a Supreme Court? Actually, they're all pretty simple to understand. When I worked out All of them are not courts. They're just unijoint Article 1 de facto inferior courts. It was really easy. It's not a complicated subject. It's just many people have different ideas. Many people are saying, go to court, I've got the answer. But in honesty, the answers are pretty simple. And what they've done is fairly easy to understand if you're listening to the right person.
This is the thing, because so many people have, you know, everyone's got different perspectives based on the lens that they're looking through, depending on what country they come from as well. And so that went, you know, tying this back into education, what kind of critical thinking and research skills do you think is essential for teens to navigate this, whether they have an adult around them that agree or disagree with what it is that they're researching and they're thinking? Do you have an opinion on critical thinking and research tools that teens could be using to try and investigate this if they're interested in what you're talking about?
Oh, absolutely, I do. And the worst thing that any kids can do today is use AI to find answers. This is a huge mistake. It is absolutely just a horror show. AI is designed to propagate propaganda and lies. The best thing that they can do is to go to Brave, to Firefox, to Google, to the internet, and to read documents, to read articles. But look, I can tell you, it's very, very hard to do this. I was only able to do this because I had a friend, Adam. And really, the only reason I was able to do workshops is because of Leah, Bridget, beside me. She convinced another friend, a wonderful friend of ours, Brad, who does drum making classes. And if it wasn't for Leah, I wouldn't be here today doing workshops and watching people's lives change in front of me. I mean, I helped them with their tax. I just had a friend the other day call me and two actually, Wayne and David David had sent he had to re-register an ASIC bill for an ABN number. He endorsed the remittance. See, when you receive a bill from ASIC, the tear off at the bottom, it's called a remittance. You need to go to a dictionary and work out what a remittance means. There's a reason it says you can pay by check on the back of the remittance. Do you want to know what the reason is? The remittance is the check. So you only need to endorse it, send it back. Guess what? David's bill was accepted by ASIC and they zeroed out the balance. Now that's quite astonishing. Now, what the government does, it sends you to third-party interlopers. Now, they will give you a hard time and they'll say, oh, you know, our policy is we don't accept bills of exchange. Well, big deal. I've got a policy that I only have to pay with peanuts. It's very hard to stand on your square. But when you know the difference between what is a lie, what is legal, what is lawful, the fact that the Bills of Exchange Act has not been overturned, all negotiable instruments can be paid. But the problem is you're working inside their legal system and it's a circular argument. Inside that system, you have to play that game very well. Otherwise, your electricity will get turned off. Leah and I are in the process now of paying a utility bill with a negotiable instrument, and so far it's been several months, and we're giving them a horrific run for their money, and it's been so much fun. So look, you've got to read. You must read. Stay away from AI. AI is really the antithesis of education and learning. Yeah, and have people bounce off. Absolutely, Leah. Yeah.
Well, the thing that's popping into my mind, though, is that a lot of people are relying on AI. I already know people who are pretty much addicted to it. They use it to make all of their decisions. If they're using AI too much, then they can be distorted the information that they're getting can be distorted, then that's actually a really dangerous path to possibly go down. So what can we actually do about this? I mean, I'm thinking about the curriculum and the youth today. Do you have any suggestions for what you would, what do you think we can do
Look,
to help them navigate
right
this?
now, I mean, you're talking about the kids and AI. I mean, I don't even think it's right for children to be in a classroom and for Wi-Fi to be anywhere in near that school. I think it's a crime. I think anybody, any government who is foisting Wi-Fi and the internet. They're doing it. It's very clear what they're doing. They're making sure that all anything that looks like paper is going to disappear. All our books are going to disappear. All these people using I don't even use a phone to pay for things. I don't even use it for the what is it, the QR code. I just can't bear to promote any of that. But fundamentally, the internet. And AI especially, is there to dumb you down. And you need to read books. There are many books out there that you can read, incredible books out there you can read. And you've still got Google, as horrible as that platform is. And you know, we're in a lot of trouble because now Google and Firefox and Brave and all these legitimate internet platforms. They are slowly going to be manipulated by AI, and there'll be nowhere to go to learn the truth other than, you know, purchasing a book. But most of it, if we don't have a proper education system, does it really matter if you're using AI or the internet? It doesn't matter. There's nowhere to run to. I think fundamentally, you've got to get your country back. The government has to be seen for what it is. It's a eugenics agency working for the City of London or the Venetian municipal British municipal elite who want to kill everyone. And unless we educate our own kids, we're in trouble. So fundamentally, I think the first step is not to send your kids to school, is to self-educate them. That's probably the first thing that I would do, is never send your kid to a university or a school. They need to be self-educated, and that would be the first place that I would be looking at educating my children.
Yes. Well, I know there are a lot of other people who would certainly agree with you. There's a huge shift towards homeschooling globally, actually. So I'd say since COVID, there's been a massive shift in a lot of people questioning what is actually happening in the school setting. So that's really interesting. And what you're talking about, what's coming to me is that in today's society, we either consume or we create. Can you expand on what do you think consuming or creating means for young people?
What do you think about that question, Lee?
Well, I just think that with regards to opportunity and what it is that you could potentially use the moment for would be to watch entertainment and be entertained. Or you can study and learn and create and co-create.
I mean, here you're asking a question that's so profound, and yet, ironically, like I said, my sister became a lawyer. My uncle's a barrister. Now, Neil and I have a twin brother, identical twin brother. He was a professional boxer in Philadelphia, had four fights, never lost any, and he had many amateur fights. He was an incredible, he won two Australian light middleweight titles on knockouts. I'm so proud of him. I had six amateur fights. Now, how do I go from that to lying my way into the best job on the face of the earth in 1979 with Clive Steel Partners, who were located at Glenavon Road, Hawthorne, on the river? I'm telling you, I remember at the time, if someone offered me $10 million and said, "Look, here's $10 million, walk away from your job," I would have said no. I was so excited about becoming something. I knew I was nothing. And this opportunity it was like finding a ton of gold in your backyard. And I grabbed it with both hands. Now, I then successfully for 45 years worked as a freelance structural mechanical draftsman. I went to the boom in Queensland for 20 years, you know, earning $4,000 a week. We're on $89 an hour, you know, milking the hell out of these big consulting engineering companies, having a ball. But how was it that back in 2004, all of a sudden I wrote my own patent? It was a very good patent. I got a good score from it, from the patents office. And after that, remember, in 2004, it was actually 2001 I wrote the patent. And at that time, I remember a modem was about as fast as a toaster, and it made all these funny noises. So I purchased the domain name patentwriting.com. I've still got it, just about to launch the website. But I then decided I would write a book on the legal construction of the patent request. Now, I did that because it excited me. It was a challenge. I was racing go-karts at the time in Geelong and Todd Road, just living life to the fullest. But when I look back on what interested me was going to the chess club in Peel Street in the early days, ringing mum at 3 a.m. to pick me up, because all we were doing was playing 5-minute games of chess. And then all of a sudden I'm publishing a book on the legal construction of a patent request that sells around the world for $149. I think you have to be with the right family, with the right people to energize you, to make you want to use your mind. If you don't use your mind, you're just going to be dead in the water. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I got it. Just was a challenge, and I found everything a challenge, and it was easy. And today, after achieving a lot of things like that, it's only because of Leah forcing me to do these workshops, I thought. I didn't think I had anything to offer, and then we quickly found out. You know, I have another friend, Adam Phillip in Sydney, and he's my go-to. We have been friends for the last decade, and together we talk about the law every day. We give Leah a very hard time, but we together have learned a lot. For example, he would send me a copy of the Adelaide Law Review and go, hey, Neville, look, the Adelaide Law Review have written that the person is the Sester Kay Trust. Can you believe that? So you've heard the term you. Everybody's running around saying, I'm not a you. You is plural. You've heard that, yes, Teresa?
I have. Yes, I have. I have heard that, and I've started questioning a lot of the words that I am using. Sometimes I don't even know which words to use, because I'm questioning what the true meanings are.
But this is why it's so good to have a friend who's as eager and passionate about the law as you are. Adam sends me rings me 3 years ago, and he says, Neville, look what I just found. It's in the tax assessment 1997, section 4.5. You is an entity. So everybody's running around saying, oh, you is plural. Oh, I'm not a you because you is plural. No. The reason why you can have a successful change from one phone plan to another phone plan, but two different organisation, is because you're using the word you. And in legalese, under the Tax Assessment Act 1997, section 4.5, you is an entity. And there's the sinister. This is how legalese, every word is a poison pawn. But if you have a friend, and if you have the right people around you, you really can grow. And I think that's one of the great things about the State Assembly.
Okay, so everything that you're talking about is really fascinating, and I'm really interested because I know that in today's society we either consume or we create. And I'm aware that we're running out of time, so this is probably going to be our final question for today. Can you expand on what it means for young people if they're consuming and creating? And can you also tie this into how you would reimagine what education could look like.
Absolutely. And, you know, the minute you ask that question, I have visions of a wonderful documentary I was watching in Finland about 20 years ago. They've been educating children for many years in Finland, and I don't know if it's changed, if it's across the board, but it was a documentary on a particular school in Finland where the kids did not follow a curriculum. They did not do tests. They didn't do anything. All they did was interact with each other, play with each other. They had marvelous Lego sets, and all the idea of their education system was simply to interact with each other and grow and be challenged with their hands, with their minds. And this was the education. I think that makes sense. Education is not being forced to punish a kid and make him do a test, make him memorize something. That's got nothing to do with education. All that means is that we're indoctrinating the kids, we're putting them under stress, we're making them obedient, we're stripping them of all the life and freedom in their mind and their emotions. The Finnish had this really worked out to a treat. They understood that education was not about that. It wasn't about punishing the kids and making them go home to do homework. It wasn't relevant. None of it's relevant. The only thing is relevant for the mind to grow and to be for their emotional state, for their creative state, with their hands, talking, communicating, being with each other, the teacher giving them interesting objects to play with, challenges. That is education.
That's amazing. And I agree with you. And yes, I think there's a lot of amazing stuff happening in Finland. I absolutely agree with you as well. And we are out of time. But Neville, I wanted to say thank you so much for coming on. You're so passionate. And all of the information that you've probably given me so much information, I couldn't take it all on board in one go. I have to re-listen to this and absorb some of the really big concepts that you were discussing so passionately. And I'm sure that people listening to this that are interested are keen to go and do some more research about this as well. So thank you so much for coming on with us today.
I'm probably passionate because I'm 65 and I have a 13-year-old son, and I want him to know everything that you're teaching and you're thinking.
Yeah. And that's what it's all about, isn't it? It's our future generation and being able to pass on and learn from our own mistakes, which is basically life, which is amazing. So thank you, everybody, for joining us on All Learning Reimagined today. And next week, we encourage you to practicing listening to your inner voice and reflecting on watching and reading, going out there and researching as much as you can, and go out and live learning. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you for joining us on All Learning Reimagined, where passion illuminates the path forward. Remember this: the future of learning doesn't arrive from above, it begins within. You are the spark, the shift, the living answer to education's silent call for transformation. So stay curious, stay awake. Let inspiration be your compass, because how we learn today is not just personal, it is profoundly generative. It shapes the very architecture of tomorrow's world. We are not separate from the system, we are its evolution. Until next time, trust the wisdom of your own unfolding and let your life be the lessons that light the way for others.